Welcome to the AI in Automotive podcast, where we speak to interesting people doing interesting things around artificial intelligence and machine learning in the automotive and mobility industries. I am Jayesh Jagasia. Welcome to part two of my conversation with Paul Eichenberg, chief strategist at Paul Eichenberg Strategic Consulting. In part one, we spoke about how data and technology are redrawing the traditional automotive landscape and powering the rise of a new generation of industry participants. Today in part two, we will talk about talent wars, car ownership in the age of data, and how an interesting application of AI is making our cities smarter and safer. Welcome, Paul. It always sort of struck me that traditionally the entry barriers into the automotive industry have been so high that it has lent itself well to a small number of very, very large corporations, both on OEM side and the tier one, tier two supplier side. And that's sort of starting to change quite a bit, isn't it? Today, you could have a company like Mobileye come out of probably a research facility or a university, take a research idea and commercialize it. And you could very viably start a company today that could be worth a lot. But importantly, with a very, very small entry barrier, could get to a point where it's got global reach and it's serving major OEMs, because they don't really have to manufacture anything anymore, right? They could be a bunch of, you know, software nerds sitting in a room and writing up programs that completely disrupt how vision processing happens, for instance. What does that mean to how companies in the traditional automotive landscape access talent and engineering talent? Because suddenly the game is moving away from access to mechanical engineering talent, and it's moving to having access to software talent. And can companies like, you know, the General Motors and Volkswagens of the world, Fords of the world, can they even compete with the Googles and Apples of the world?
Well, I think, first of all, it's going to be a challenge. And I think one of the challenges that can't be ignored when you're having this kind of conversation is the type of multiples that these organizations trade at. So, you know, if you look at traditional automotive suppliers, these are, or suppliers and OEMs, these are relatively low multiple businesses, which means that the way they can invest in new technologies, in the risk, is so different than what a Google or Apple can. Or even a Samsung, Panasonic. You know, this is something that needs to be acknowledged when you start talking about the competitive challenges that these organizations have. But I think one example is Cruise. Cruise Automation is a team of 200 software engineers that are developing systems out in Silicon Valley. General Motors comes in, buys them, let's say, for $1 billion. I think it was advertised to be $1.1 billion. And now, you know, it's valued to be $18, $19 billion. This is the tool that OEMs are using to build new types of cultures and new types of environments that allow them to attract talent. I think as you see the ramp up of Cruise, what you see here is last year, General Motors let 7,000 workers from their, you know, engineering and their professional ranks go. Those are the mechanical engineers. Those are the materials people that are no longer as valuable as software engineers and people with artificial intelligence background and even electronics experts. So as you see sort of General Motors going through this activity as far as growing an organization like Cruise, there's a downsizing that comes as they start to shift from having engineers developing these powertrain systems to engineers developing autonomous vehicle systems and developing these data strategies. So I think what we're in is we're in the midst of a transformation of our industry, and it's a transformation of skill sets where data scientists are extremely valuable in the industry, where, you know, mechanical engineers become less and less of the focus going forward. So I think the industry is in the midst of this shift. And I think what we're seeing is we're just starting to see the early innings of all of that playing out.
That's really interesting. One of the other things that I'm really curious to explore with you is this whole concept of data ownership and data privacy and data security. I'm just going back to our discussion on data being the new oil and the value of data. And I'm sort of connecting the dots with this whole change in automotive ownership models that's coming. So will I be owning a car 5 years in the future, or will I just own the data that I generate from the car, or will I not own anything at all and I'll just use the car and let my data be used by somebody else to fund the entire transaction? I'm very curious to hear what your sort of outlook and take on all of that is. And from a consumer's perspective, what does that mean? Because, you know, people driving their cars today with all the sensors that a modern car has, I'm not sure how many people think about who really owns that data, and is there anything that they're getting out of it? Is there anything that's getting compromised by way of corporations having access to their data? What's your take on this part?
Yeah, so first of all, what I would say is when it comes to the changing model, I think what we're going to see play out over the course of the next decade, and it's really going to start in the next 3-4 years, is the idea of the robo-taxi. So what's interesting is if you look what Uber has done, despite not making money, despite losing a lot of money, the model that they've driven into city centers is where a taxi fare may cost you $3. Uber Lyft model has driven that cost down to $1.80 per mile. And basically, in city centers, the idea of robo-taxis, these self-driving vehicles, the objectives of the players in the space is to get that down to $1 per mile. And, you know, what I would tell you is you can easily identify in 5 minutes, 30 to 40 companies that have come out and said that they're going to do robo-taxis. And whether it's OEMs like GM and Ford through Cruise and Argo, whether it's BMW and Daimler who formed a joint business to make robo-taxis, or if it's startups like Zoox or Aurora or Waymo, you know, through Google, there's just countless players that are looking to be in this space. And what I would tell you, this is really interesting technology to look at what happens in these city centers. So if you are living in a large metropolitan area and you've got to go 4 or 5 miles at a time, why own a vehicle? If it's going to cost you $5-6 to get to and from where you're going, you don't have to worry about parking. You know, this could be revolutionary. And I guess what we're seeing through the work that we're doing is, you know what, a couple hundred thousands of these by 2025 in the American, you know, large city centers could be really the breakthrough that leads to a staggering change as far as how mobility is handled in cities. So I do think robo-taxis is a really intriguing technology to watch. If you think of the economic business case for that, it's really interesting what the OEMs are trying to achieve. And at least on paper, they can justify, you know what, we think these self-driving vehicles could reach this sort of target of $1 per mile. But I think in the suburban areas, in the rural areas, you know, these aren't technologies that are going to lend themselves. Still, car ownership is going to be the primary activity. And then again, as you start to put sensors on vehicles to make them safer, as you start to add, you know, again, camera radar or LiDAR systems to do automatic emergency braking, for lane keeping, for all these advanced safety systems, there are so many different uses for that data that becomes, you know, just additional ways to leverage the technology to make just the entire environment much safer. And whether it's enabled by vehicle-to-vehicle communications, vehicle-to-technology, vehicle-to-infrastructure, whatever that communication is, those are just, again, additional uses that will come from these private vehicles. That my sense is much like what we talked about with Hayden AI, you will be able to opt in as a consumer. Do I want to share my data? And there'll be economic benefit to that. You know, part of the economic benefit of the Hayden model is that you get a bounty. If data is pulled from your vehicle, that results in, for instance, somebody speeding by a stopped school bus, as children are in the crosswalk, there will be a bounty paid to the individual that allows that data to be pulled from their vehicle. This is all part of an emerging ecosystem that is hard to forecast. It's hard to identify, but I can tell you based on the research that we've done and the tech scouting, is that there's emerging business models that are coming out of this ecosystem based on this very valuable data that will be placed in vehicles. Another area that I think would be remiss if I didn't mention at this point in time is driver monitoring systems. So driver monitoring systems are cameras that are coming to vehicles. And really, the main driver for these camera systems are for vehicles that are, let's say, level 2 ADAS systems, where you have a highway pilot system, where you can be hands off, feet off, and allow the vehicle to drive in that environment. Let's say in a traffic jam or on the highway. What OEMs are doing as a fail-safe type of measure is they're putting cameras in the vehicle to observe the individual to make sure that the driver is engaged enough so that they can take control of the vehicle in 3 to 5 seconds. They want to make sure that you haven't fallen asleep, that you're not drowsy, that you're engaged so that you can handle the responsibility of driving again and making split-second decisions based on the environment you're in. But now think about putting a camera system in a vehicle. What can that camera system do? It can provide other safety features. So like, let's say a child is accidentally left in the back seat of a hot vehicle. There's now systems to ensure the safety of that child. That's some of the laws that we see here in North America. No child left behind. But also what you do is you open sort of Pandora's box. That data becomes very valuable to insurance companies. So insurance companies can observe, how safe are you being in that environment? How do you act? What kind of risky behavior do you have? It's valuable to retailers. You know, how do you use the ultimate driving machine? what brands do you favor? There's organizations like Affectiva, which is a new entrant to the space, which is really the ability to monitor emotions. And now just imagine having an understanding of your emotions so that if you're stressed, you know, the vehicle starts to say to you, hey, how about if we play a different type of music? How about if we do something to help, you know, change the mood? These type of personalizations that will come from this, consumers will see great benefits, okay? Can change the radio, can change the lighting, can roll down windows if you're drowsy. You know, these type of things to help improve that experience. But at the same time, it could be used for what people may believe to be more intrusive things. So this is all of the questions that will be asked about this technology, how it will be used, and how, you know, it will benefit consumers and drivers and improve the driving experience. So again, these are just a few examples.
So cameras in the cars, folks, you have to start being very careful about what you do in the car now.
What I would add to that is there's a lot of, you see it all the time with computers. You'll see people just tape the camera on their computers. So my sense is consumers will very quickly understand, oh, okay, I just put a piece of tape on that. Nobody's going to be watching me. But if you want to drive the vehicle in some type of self-driving mode, if you want the benefits and the features that come with the personalization, this is where you're going to have to opt in to utilizing the technology. So
there, Paul's got a solution for you as well. Just use a bit of tape. Paul, we've spoken a couple of times about Hayden AI now, and I'm really curious. I've been over the website, but I'd love it if you could lay it out for our listeners as well. What Hayden AI is all about, and what's the product, what's the proposition, what's the company like?
Yeah, so again, the idea behind Hayden AI is the idea is to leverage these emerging systems to provide a safer environment, a safer city environment. And the way that it does that is, again, it uses some of the sensors, like what we're talking about, cameras, radar, LiDAR, it uses traffic cameras, it uses this information. And basically, what they do is they pull information from these different sensors in different systems and basically create, you know, utilizing things like machine vision to basically identify for municipalities, for instance, where there's a traffic violation. So again, I used the example earlier, a violation of somebody passing a school bus when it stopped. And let's say that's a $450 ticket. The Hayden AI business model is that 50% of that ticket goes to the municipality that basically opts in to use the Hayden system. But then Hayden then splits the bounty, the other 50%, they give 25% to the consumer that opts in to share the technology that they have available on, let's say, their vehicle, along with Hayden then gets 25% of the revenue that allows them to continue to build the platform. And then what the municipality gets is they get the video evidence, along with they get the additional data that is sent to the municipality on a platform, a software platform that basically allows them to pull that up on their computer. They look at the video evidence, and then the ticket is basically, you know, submitted, you know, as a result of that evidence. This is one use, but then think of another use where a policeman comes upon an accident. What the policeman can do is pull up on his iPhone and basically geofence an area around the accident, basically puts in a set of time And then again, for vehicles or traffic cameras that are in that area, again, all that video data can be provided. So there can be a reconstruction of an accident. If there's a criminal that's involved in a chase, there's a way to monitor that in a much safer environment. You know, and all of this is being driven out of safe city initiatives, the Vision Zero that cities have. But this is, again, just a novel idea on how to use this technology going forward. There's even the ability, much like people use today. So if you look at the video doorbell systems, video doorbell systems today are doing crowdsourcing. So a Ring doorbell is using crowdsourcing so that you can see where are the reported thefts, you know, as far as parcels, you know, that are sitting on front doors. You know, this type of evidence is shared in sort of a crowdsourcing manner. You can start to do the same type of things through this type of software platform. So again, Hayden AI has a very elegant solution to leverage this technology further. It's an opportunity for consumers who want to participate to share this very valuable data. And it's an opportunity for municipalities to add just the ability to make those environments much safer.
I was going to say it actually sounds like highly distributed, crowdsourced surveillance. When I mean surveillance is in the most positive sense of the word, almost a neighborhood watch on steroids. You know what I'm saying?
That's a great analogy. It is a neighborhood watch on steroids.
We put that on the website and I'll take my commission. Thank you.
All right.
This is a really exciting time to be in the automotive industry with all these changes around us. Any closing comments on how you see the next 3 to 5 years panning out?
Yeah. So this would be the comments I would add. You know, we're 100 years into the automotive industry. And I believe that the changes that we will see over the next 5 to 10 years will only continue to accelerate, but will be far more drastic of change than what we saw in the first 100 years. So the first 100 years, what did we have? We had, you know, the decision that the internal combustion engine was going to be, you know, the main source. You know, we had intermittent wipers. You know, we had these type of technologies. But as far as how the automotive business model, the supplier model, the novel uses of technology, how that will all take place over the next 5 to 10 years, it is just going to be an amazing amount of change that I think even for people today is really difficult to fathom.
Paul Eichenberg, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thanks for joining us today, and thanks for your time.
All right, my pleasure.
My name is Jayesh Jagasia, and I host the AI in Automotive podcast. This is a platform for conversations about the rapidly growing role of AI in the automotive and mobility industries. Join me as I host experts in the domain to learn more about how AI is shaping our future. Look for the AI in Automotive podcast wherever you get your podcasts.